Hey, this is JT.
And this is Lady C.
Welcome to another episode of The Critical Thought. And we want to share what has been going on and talking with different Jehovah's Witnesses as well as ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. It has been an interesting time indeed. Today, we're going to do an interview with a couple who has their own channel, Awaken Truths. And we would like to welcome to the channel our friends, Jevin and Lexi.
What's going on?
What's up, y'all?
Hey.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Finally.
Yourself?
Y'all in the flesh?
I know, right? We've been trying to get together for the longest.
Right.
Everybody's schedule is crazy. And but yeah, we're glad to have you guys on. And
oh, we're so happy
to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
Yep.
It's like a dream come true.
We
get to interview with...
Hey, we always enjoy interviewing people because everybody has a story to tell and their story can impact other people as well.
Definitely.
And it's so interesting too, because there's so many channels coming out, and like yourselves, you know, the younger generation is joining their voices, which is so nice because, you know, when we were coming along, it was like, we didn't have all this.
No.
And now it's like, you know, the more people coming out in the different generations is, you know, showing the diversity amongst the group so that other different age groups can also start to, you know, gravitate to different channels. So
yeah.
I really appreciate you guys out there.
Oh,
yeah.
Here.
It's nothing like having the OGs on, you know.
No.
Everybody who has left, like we all know, XJW Critical Thought.
That's like the first goal when you wake up.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, we want as my wife often says, we want to try to make a soft landing space when people leave.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You're already scared.
Yeah, that's true.
Because when people, I mean, we have such a difficult time in this organization. We're looking, we're trying to find where we can go. There's nobody to talk to. And these types of channels, they provide that. I mean, there's just so many good content creators out now that are helping more and more people to, as we often say, you know, take that one step back and be willing to evaluate what they're part of.
Yeah.
And so that's why we wanted to have you guys here today, so you can share your story, share your thoughts, your views on what you've seen, what you're seeing right now, what's going on, and how you look back now at how you made that journey, because it's a journey. And for each person, the journey is different. Each person has a different journey to make.
So you guys want to kind of start talking a little bit about yourself and, you know, how you got to where you are today?
Sure.
Just, you know, give us a little baby steps or the TMZ version or whatever.
Yeah. All right, let's start from the beginning.
Okay. So I'm basically third generation Jehovah's Witness. So I was born into it. We both were born into it.
Yeah.
And my mom, though, actually, whenever we were younger, she was disfellowshipped. So I did get to see like the other side of things. And I lived with my grandmother for a while, which when I lived with her, it was, we were going to the meetings, we were going out in service, you know, it was like boom, boom, boom. And then eventually I did move back in with my mom. And when that happened, she was ready to get reinstated. Like she was having nightmares herself of like the Great Tribulation. I remember her telling me these stories so clearly. Like I had this recurring dream that, you know, we were all out in the ocean and there was all the people from the Kingdom Hall was on this boat and I had to hand you guys over to that boat. And she remembers it so like clearly. It was traumatizing for her, you know.
Right.
And that's really what had brought her back to the Kingdom Hall. And so when she was reinstated, we were doing really good. I got baptized at 16 and it was what I wanted. You know, I thought that I was doing everything right. I was like, I'm ready for this, you know, like I'm ready to be baptized as one of Jehovah's Witnesses. I was one of those outsiders, even in school, like not super weird, but I was weird enough, you know, to where I don't stand up for the flag, don't do any of that stuff. And it was a long journey. But even having my mom, like before I got baptized, I remember her telling me, she's like, are you sure this is what you want to do? And I remember being so offended. Like, what do you mean? Like, is this what I want to do? Of course it is. Why would I not want to do this? You know? Then I hit my older teen years, and I had gotten in trouble, went into like a whole judicial committee and everything, and I was put on private reproof. And it was from that moment that I kind of started like waking up, because I was offended at how they handled my judicial committee. At first, it was fine. Like, I had one set of elders, but then they transitioned over because we were doing the merger and everything. And they brought in an elder that was like a really close family friend to us. And I expressed to them, I'm like, I don't think that it's fair for you to be in my judicial committee, because you're like a second grandpa to me. You know what I mean? I don't think that this is like right, because he knows me too well. And we had started dating like around that time. And he was trying to bring in like all of his opinions about him and like our relationship. And I'm like, that's not what this judicial committee is about. Like, it's about that situation that happened before. So let's talk about that. We don't have to talk. You don't have to bring your opinions in front of all of these other elders about like my current relationship, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's kind of how I started to like stray away.
Yeah.
Because then I wasn't putting the same time and effort that I used to before. After that had happened, I think that I was just like offended, and I'm like, I don't think that this is right, and they weren't listening to me.
Yeah.
So I stopped putting in as much effort, and then he had his wake up journey, which kind of brought me out even more.
Yeah, it was,
man, that's some, yeah, that family ties. We often talk about how our families and who our families are, who they know, they will. It can impact what happens even in judicial cases, like you had mentioned before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just didn't think it was right for you. Like, he wasn't even on my original panel. And then to bring him in, it was like, you're basically my second grandfather. Like, you shouldn't be. And I didn't go to you for a reason.
You know, like, he probably asked you.
Know, I think the tragedy behind the whole thing is the fact that you're being fear-mongered into this religion. Yeah. Because remember, you're like, we're having these dreams. We're going to be dying at Armageddon.
Right.
Then you get into the religion. You're young, getting baptized. And then the issue that you're facing is, I'm getting in trouble for life learning experience.
Yeah.
Like, I was doing an interview with somebody a couple of weeks ago, and I was telling her that the crime that you probably committed is something that your classmates got in trouble for.
Yeah.
But the Jehovah's Witness is, you're going to pay for your life.
Yeah.
You're going to pay for life with these little things that we're doing. And other people, they realize kids do things or whatever, because some people got in trouble for smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they get cut off from their family for the rest of their life. You know, stuff like that. Yeah. So it's definitely traumatizing.
Yeah.
It is.
How about yourself? How does your family get involved in the witnesses?
My aunt, I want to say in the 70s, because none of my family were witnesses. So my granddad's sister was the first one. And then I think her husband, and then my granddad started studying, which was, he was into like the Black Panther Party. And I don't know how he went from that to that. I don't know what.
So big difference.
Yeah, like I don't know what transitioned, but then he started studying, and my grandmother was not with it. She hated the witnesses. And over time, she started studying, and by this time my mom and uncle were kids, and then they started studying, and by that time my grandparents had two more kids. So by this time it's my grandparents, my aunt and her husband, and they 9 kids. And then by the time I come along, my mom was disfellowshipped. This is like the 90s.
Yeah.
And so we went to the hall, like memorials is sometimes hit and miss, like every so many months we would go. My grandmother was a pioneer. Granddad is still an elder to this day. And so when we would be around them, they would bring us to the meetings. But it's, I like doing like regular kid stuff, like playing sports and the typical stuff at school. So I wasn't really interested. So I would do like the witness stuff around my grandparents.
Right.
And then I would just do what I like to do on my time. But I didn't realize, like, even getting in trouble at school, I didn't think my grandparents knew that I was like, you know, still doing like normal kid stuff until I got a little older. So fast forward, I want to say in 2013, when I was turning 20, that's when I was like, all right, they keep bugging me about this. When you going to get baptized? When you going to join the school? You're not going to be in the new system. How you think Jehovah, you know, just the whole guilty thing to force you to do it. So I'm like, all right, I'll study. And so within probably 6 months, I got baptized right before I turned, I think, 20. And I say probably for like the rest of the year, I was doing all right, like taking it real serious about the books, no more rap music. And then, you know, like you go through that freshly out the water thing where you like, yeah, I'm zealous. And then it start to wear off a little bit over time. And that's where it got to where it was like, I just feel like I'm just doing what everybody else want me to do. And I just kind of straddled the fence for a while. I switched to a different congregation to help out with, serve where the need is greater. And it was just, I don't know. In the back of my mind, I always felt out of place around witnesses versus. And one thing I never did, I never cut off my friends from high school or like my family members. I would go to the hall. Then after the hall, I'm talking about in the car, I done took my tie off. I'm getting all this stuff off. And then I go do what I want to do and hang with like my friends from school. And eventually I got to where I was tired of doing both. And I ended up getting disfellowship. My first time ever getting in trouble, they was like, you got to go. And it was just like, it just didn't make sense. And my aunt, I had talked to her because she had been disfellowship like 3 times. We got a lot of, we call them 3 strikers in our family. We got a lot of family members that have been out like 3 times, multiple times back and forth.
Yeah.
But I told my aunt first before the elders, and she was like, oh, you be okay. And once she told me like, well, once I told her I'm getting disfellowship, she's like, this, you should appeal it. And I'm just like, it was kind of a relief at the same time. Like I'm gonna disappoint my family, but I don't have to get up on Saturday right now. Like I'm cool. And by this time at our Kingdom Hall, we had about 5 or 6 young people back to back all got disfellowship. So it was like, I got people I can hang with outside the hall that I'm already friends with. So it's not the only thing. My grandmother was battling cancer, so that pushed me to hurry and get back. So within a year, I got reinstated. But by that time, it was like, you see how the so-called friends treat you, and everybody done welcome you back with open arms. Some people don't really speak to you, or it's, oh, hey, and go on about their business. And from that point, it was like, I was never into it as much. And then over time, me and Lexi met around the end of 2018. And we were both at the same phase. We were just kind of fed up with the whole organization thing. And once,
but we didn't know that we felt that way.
Yeah.
Personally. So like, we were only feeling that way individually, but we didn't know that the other person felt that way.
Right.
And remember, we actually had broken up one time because I felt guilty. Like the elders were making me, it was after one of my judicial committees. And, I was like, okay, we're just going to have to break up, because they made me feel like I had to break up.
They did a shepherding call, remember? Out of nowhere.
Yeah. And so I remember breaking up, and I was like, we just are going to have to wait until we're more spiritually strong, because those are words that they used, you know?
Yep.
So I'm just repeating back what I heard, and I'm like, you know, we can wait, and you have to be, you know, the head. So we have to both be like real strong, and then we can get back together or whatever. That lasted, what, a day and a half?
Like one day. Cause your parents is like, you done lost your mind. Like, Lexi's parents, like, no, they don't listen to them. They tripping.
Yeah. You don't have to. My parents said that. And so it made me, even my grandma said it, my mama. And there, I was like, okay, maybe I shouldn't have. It's like, you know, they can be very strict sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they basically gave me some reasoning.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, but that eventually we just kind of faded out. And I guess we get into like when we woke up now.
Well, yeah, because COVID hit. Oh, and those Zoom meetings.
Our last meeting. That's what we got to throw in first. Last Kingdom Hall meeting.
Yeah.
All right. So we only went to the hall probably like 3 times together. Mm-hmm. If that.
Yeah.
So we went, and I remember it was this Watchtower study about, you know, the assault on children. And it was like, because, you know, you don't hear this stuff at the Kingdom Hall. So at the time, we like, okay.
What is this about?
And right. So before the end of the meeting, they make this announcement. Hey, there are some apostates outside protesting.
No, they didn't say that. They didn't say that announcement. All they asked for was for all the brothers to come to the back.
Oh, that's right. They told us.
Yeah.
And then they kind of shared with the friends, like,
don't,
there's some apostates out there. So when you go to your car, don't look at them.
Yeah.
Don't listen to them. And it was just random because I had never seen any of these people before ever. So I'm like, who are these random people? Like, I don't recognize them from none of the halls around here.
Right.
And it just sat in the back of my mind for a long time.
I remember leaving the hall and he's like telling me not to look over there. And I'm over there looking like, I want to see what's going on. Like, why are they here?
Yep. So it was, I don't know. That whole situation was weird. So
that was our last meeting together.
It was. And over time, it was always certain things, you know, you push to the back of your mind, like you always say. And it was certain teachings that I'm just like, I never got a clear answer on. And it wasn't until summer 2020, a sister we know, well, she's not a sister no more, but right. Mama Shai, she's from, think like Arkansas or something. And she had messaged me like, so what do you think about the convention? And I was like, well, I only went like a couple days. And she's like, you notice all the governing body members is white and most of the brothers gave a talk. And I'm like, I've been thinking that for a long time, but I've been putting it in the back of my head. And she was like, well, what you think about this? And sent me the first apostate video. And it was that first video is like, it's like something is pulling you to watch it, but you're nervous. And I just watched it. And then at that moment, that's my mind. It was the regular pioneer.
Yeah.
And it was instantly like, oh, we done got. And the next thing, the next video I seen was JT. And I went down a whole rabbit hole of everything on XJW Critical Thinker.
And he was going through this by himself. Like, I didn't know that that this was happening with him. And we were in a relationship at this point. And
we lived together at this time, too.
We lived together. I forgot about that. Okay, so we were living together. And I just feel like he is off. Like, something is going on with him. I'm thinking he's still depressed from when his grandma passed away. And I'm like, okay, maybe he's just depressed. But I can feel that he's, like, holding something back from me. And I remember always asking me, like, what is going on? Like, what's wrong? Yeah. He's like, you won't understand. You won't understand.
Like, you just won't get it.
And then finally, you shared with me the 144,000. Like, you asked me a question, and immediately, I knew he was looking at apostate material.
Yeah.
I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
But he asked me a question, and he was like, are the 144,000, like, read this scripture, is it symbolic or literal, you know? And I was like, well, the rest of the scripture is symbolic, but this one, this part right here is literal. Like,
and it's like, well, how can it go from symbolic, literal? I'm like, that done. And at that point is where the gears like started to, like, all the dust come off and it's like, and that.
Because I always had my own doubts, but, you know, you're so afraid to, like, share any doubts that you have. And you feel like that is your own imperfection instead of realizing, like, no, these doubts are serious, you know.
But yeah, that's pretty much sums it up.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's all it takes, because many times you have things in the back of your mind, you know, that you just put in the back there, and then all you need is a trigger. All you need is a trigger. Were you afraid? Yeah, I mean, so you need. Let me ask you a question. Were you afraid to tell her what you? Because I mean, you know that. I mean, like she's said, the minute you mentioned it, she's zooming in on that boy just in a heartbeat.
Yeah, because by that time I watched a lot of your videos explaining like how it's hard to tell other people about it because they may not even realize that something was wrong in the first place. And then from that to going and doing their own research. And I had even talked to Lexi's sister about it because she was living with us at the time. And she was like, yeah, I done watched some stuff on YouTube too that I don't know. I don't know, because her sister never got baptized. And my sister to this day never got baptized. And my mom is still disfellowship. So they go to all the meetings, but it's like they don't really go by everything. We still hang with our family members and do what we want to do, but they still go to the meetings because they believe in it. But other than that, it was one of those things.
We talk to a lot of people that get into a lot of hot water with their significant other, and they just couldn't stop talking to the point that they're like divorced now, kids are gone, you know, just the whole thing. Everything just shattered in their lives. So how long did it take you to tell Lexi from the time that you started, you know, watching these videos?
Probably it was over a month.
Was it 6 months? A year? A month?
It was probably about 2 months because it was still summertime.
It wasn't that long, really, in the grand scheme of things, because I think we had pretty open communication from the beginning. So, but that right there, like, I was kind of hammering him too. Like, what is going on with you? Like, I could sense that something, he was hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually he had to put it out there. But the way that he did it, like, overwhelm me with information. And as a matter of fact, for a long time, I was on my own journey, you know, and he allowed me to take all of those steps myself without like impeding on my thoughts or on my opinions. And it was, it kind of went like that.
Yeah, because even like the governing body thing, I remember in the beginning, you were like, well, the governing body has good intentions. They just feel like that they're doing the right thing. And I didn't say nothing, but I know like they bogus. Like they know exactly what they are doing. Like they're taking advantage of people. But you know, you just got to let people go through the process sometime and then give them a little, kind of like how you manipulate like people into coming into the Kingdom Hall, give them a little bit here.
It's like a spoon.
Give them a little more. And then it's like, well, what about this fellowship? Oh, we'll talk about this fellowship and, you know, down the line, just keep having this study with me. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like bringing, when people are trying to come out, you can't just dump the whole bucket on them. Like, it's a cult. It's all fake. They're taking your money. Like, you just got a little by little.
Because even now to this day, it's like we're still learning more and more and more, you know, about the organization. So for you to come out and then have all of this information, and to somebody freshly like coming out, that's overwhelming. And then you do look like the crazy apostate, you know. But so you have to have that control yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what was your emotional? How, can you explain your emotional journey? You know, waking up together. You know, how did it affect you? You know.
Ooh, from the beginning. So thankfully, like when I got this fellowship, all the people that got this fellowship before me had woke up and never came back. So I kind of went back by myself. So when I did wake up, I had a bunch of people that I can ask, like, yo, remember we had that conversation about such and such? And they were able to give me some steps like, this is what you're going to go through. It's going to be okay. Because at first it was just like your whole world just was shaking apart. And it's just like, I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where to go with this stuff now.
Yeah.
But somebody told me like, a lot of that stuff we learned at the hall is fake, but you be all right. Just take it a day at a time. And what helped me is just watching other people's videos, especially y'all channel, to look and see what information y'all had.
Yeah.
And then just kind of go step by step. And then I noticed a lot of the people that left, like a lot of them turned out okay. Like they found other things to keep themselves occupied.
Yeah.
And of course, like the con is losing a lot of your family members or people you thought was your friends.
Yeah.
But then it's like you get to start a new life. And the best, it was like a mix because it was the whole world shaking. But at the same time, it was like all this weight been lifted off my shoulders because it felt like my last couple years after I was there, after being reinstated, it was just like, going to the meeting after work was a chore. Just being able, I would get dressed at the last minute, just throw something on, drag myself to the hall. Amen. I'm back out the door. I'm gone. And it was just like, I was just tired. I was exhausted. And once I found out it wasn't the truth, it was a mix of like, it's sad, but I'm glad that I don't have to follow these made up rules no more.
Yeah.
And I get to not, I don't have to go to the hall and worry about people saying, well, we missed you at the meeting. Why wasn't you here? And you got to explain yourself. So all of that, it was like I got to trade kind of being a little lost, but get rid of all of that and having to deal with all these people and all these people pressuring you and trying to get you to, you know, study. I had to study again after I got reinstated. That was a chore. It was just so much to deal with all at once. But
I know for me, like even within our relationship, I felt my first feelings were like, okay, we're not going to be able to be together anymore. You know what I mean? Like that's what was first going through my mind. And then I had to be real with myself and be like, okay, I do have doubts. I need to like address these doubts and try to find answers for myself. So that's what I tried to do. I tried to look for the answers myself through JW.org, just like they tell you to. And I'll say whenever I first woke up, I felt lonely, but I knew that I would at least have my mom because my mom is like a very, and I knew I would have you know, my mom is like a very open person and she's always had her doubts, but she just kind of did things to appease her family. But I did feel like I was losing a lot of people because I went from having like a ton of friends in the organization, you know, to transitioning over to nursing school to where I almost felt like I was soft shunned during like the nursing school time because the school was taking up so much of my time that I wasn't able to be hanging out with my friends as much as before, where before I was at two or three graduation parties every single weekend. You know what I mean? Two, three, some kind of party every weekend. So like me and my sister were very connected, you know, within the organization, and we knew a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so losing that felt very, I don't know, it felt bad. You know, I was right. like, this is awful. Like, we're never going to have a community like this again. And in that moment, you're almost like willing to trade off your moral values just for the community. that's how I felt.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, I can't, I have to like be real with myself, and I have to be within integrity with me. And then it started becoming easier, because then it's like all these people, as soon as I stopped hanging out as much, it's like a soft shun to me. So are they really my friends? Like those questions started coming up. But then I had to go to the rules that are within the organization. I'm like, okay, I don't believe in this blood doctrine. I don't believe in disfellowshipping. I don't believe in so many of these core values that this religion has. So why am I following it?
Right.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, they dangle our relationship with family members and friends. And like you said, that's what often keeps a lot of people back in.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I felt like I didn't want people to think that I was the bad person. And it was just all about my reputation. And it was like, I just want to keep going back to call people just so they can see, look, I haven't changed. I'm the same person.
But that didn't.
What's funny is that one of my friends, like later on, she actually ended up waking up and we hung out, and she was like, oh, you're still the same. Like, it's still you. I'm like, duh.
Yep. And I got one friend. I got one friend from the hall that I still talk to all the time. And I'm not sure if he's familiar with our channel, but we still friends on social media, but we still talk. And I'm just like, one day I want him and his wife hopefully to wake up. But that's so like bad. The only witness that still talks to me. But family, like my cousin, I got family members that got disfellowshipped for some wild stuff, or either didn't get caught, but I know about it. In the moment, I'm like, I don't want to go to the hall no more. They're like, oh, we can't talk to you no more. And I'm just like, are you serious? are you joking?
We know people like that too. Family.
Yeah. The level of self-righteousness is just unreal. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're like you said, they're doing everything, and yet all of a sudden they get Ricky Righteous Boy.
Right.
Yep.
What about your personal growth and identity after you left? You know, how did that, you know, play out in your life? You know,
I guess I can start. When I got this fellowship, I got to do everything that I always wanted to do. Like when I before I got this fellowship, I didn't have no tattoos. Within that year, I was covered all through here, chest here, back. And they are looking at me like, what did you do to yourself? Like, I got that a lot, but it was like, deep down, this is what I always wanted to do. And then even toward before I left, I would let my beard grow in between the meetings, because I got my ears pierced while I was disfellowship. So when I got reinstated, I would have to take my earrings out on the meeting days and then pop them back in, like things like that. And the moment, once we woke up, I let my hair grow. And it's like, even when I was a kid, looking back, I would just draw pictures. It was like a grown version of me. And looking back, it looks exactly how I look now. So it was like, I'm just who I always wanted to be. And a lot of the witnesses, you notice, they want to be who they want to be, but they got to wait for permission. And you see it like with the beard thing and with things like this, like the no jacket. Like, they are just being who they always wanted to be.
Yeah.
But they just had to wait for a say-so. And the difference with us, we're not waiting for somebody to give us permission to be ourselves.
I'm not going to lie. I felt super free, like with my personal identity once we left. I felt free to explore it, because I don't really feel like I ever knew exactly who I was, because I was just being who everybody else told me I should be. Yeah. So then I had to go through like a really deep, like, personal identity journey as well. And realize that everything that they told us to fear, Like now I get to explore those things, you know what I mean? And decide for myself if they're good or bad. Like even when it comes to finance, I love talking about finances. Like I'm a budget freak. Like I love investing, all that stuff. Yeah. And they would like look down on that kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So I got to explore that more. And I got my nose pierced. And that's something that like they obviously frown upon and everything. But I realized that really who I was then was still me, who I am now. Now I just have like more, like I can go out farther.
You're unlimited now. So yeah, we can read what we want to read, hang out with who we want to hang out.
Yeah.
We're not doing like crazy stuff, right? You know, like robbing banks or nothing like that. Like they try to make it seem like, oh, if you're not here, you're going to be out robbing banks and stealing old ladies' purses. Like, no, we're not doing nothing crazy, but we are allowed to do some yoga or something like that. Like
that's
simple stuff like that that they always said you can't do.
Yeah. We went through like, we started meditating and doing things like that. And they would always look down on it. Even still now in our comments, when we talk about like meditation and yoga, it's still the same thing. Like it's demon worship and all this stuff. I'm like, you guys just do the research for yourself and decide if it's right for you. But like, once we started, we were like, we understand exactly why they tell you not to do yoga and things, because you end up feeling so interconnected with everybody and everything around you. You know, you don't feel so much like this is what makes us different. And this is what makes us different. And all these barriers are up between like people.
That's true.
It feels like it had been stripped away. Like once we started to do like our meditation and stuff, it's so much easier to relate with another person, you know?
Like, yeah, because they always, like you said, put division up with other people. Like don't associate with them because they go to church. Yeah. Well, we can have a conversation with this person and have a good time and realize we got a lot more in common. The only difference is I go to the Kingdom Hall on that street and you go to the church on that street. But other than that, like we are still humans and stuff, but they try to paint this illusion that Jehovah's Witnesses live in this separate world than everybody else. And it's like, no, we live in the exact same world. Like it's all one.
And we're all going through our own personal journeys. We're all going through things at different times. You know, we have trials, tribulations, and life just feels like this, and that's okay. But like Jehovah's Witnesses have always painted the picture that like, if you're hitting lows, it's because of Satan, you know? Mm-hmm. And anytime that you are blessed, it's because Jehovah's blessing you because you're doing the right thing. You know, like it was never just because this is life.
Yeah, but then on the flip side, once you leave, that's true. If something happens, oh, you only got good things happening because Satan is doing it for you.
Yeah.
And then if you're not a witness and something bad happens, Jehovah's punishing you.
Yeah.
So I would ask a witness, why are bad things happening to you when you're a pioneer or an elder? Jehovah should be blessing you.
You're right about that. And you know, something too that I found is that they try to make you think that you're on an island by yourself. Yes. But then at the Kingdom Hall, if you didn't live up to those standards of being a pioneer or auxiliary, are you a regular auxiliary? Are you a pioneer? Are you a Bethel and all that? Then of course, those people in those arenas, if people weren't pioneers and at Bethel, they didn't want to be around you either. You know, so they kind of had their differences. They try to you actually felt the different
clicks
within the organization when you were a witness. It was worse, you know.
Yeah,
a lot of people didn't feel like they were connected to the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yes,
The vast majority. I think the vast majority of the average congregation, most of the members don't feel connected. You got that little clique of maybe like the elders and maybe the pioneers and the ministerial service, and they might allow a few stragglers in who are not. But if you got a congregation with, you know, 80, 90, 100 publishers, most of the friends, and that was one of the things that we observed. That we tried to include people with, you know, when I became an elder and stuff, we tried to include people in because basically people got left out. People just got left out. And even though we sold people on that, you know, we all brothers and stuff, I think y'all guys really cover very well about the conscious matter. You as a witness, you can't choose or you can't determine what your conscience will allow you to do. Well, I want this or don't want that. The Watchtower literally tells witnesses what their conscience should and should not accept, which is ironic because that's kind of defeats the whole purpose of a conscience.
Right. Yes. It's not yours.
Yes. You're not using it. Yeah.
But you know what it says? I think like with what you just said about the beards, it was like, you know, when we were out for a while after we had our accident, and we were talking about all that stuff, and we were talking about how crazy it was, and mm-hmm. how, you know, when we started looking online on the internet, you know, there's some family members that are going to meetings that are friends with me on Facebook. And the day mm-hmm. I saw the beard of the brother, I was like, oh, look at this. He, you know, he wanted to do this all the while. And then we talked about how, isn't it crazy how you got all these grown-ass men, right? And now it took an organization to tell them I could wear a beard.
Yeah,
it's like, they've been wearing beards on the weekend, you know, and they go on vacation. They used to, and in my congregation, the brothers yeah. wore beards on their vacation. You know, yeah. and when they came back to the meeting, that's when they would shave. But you mean to tell me that all these people are tiptoeing around and afraid to show some whiskers? And then in New York, I'm like, it's okay. And then what really got me is how quick they did it. It wasn't like they waited 6 months later, peeked around the corner and said, does anybody else grow some whiskers today? You know, it was like, no, they did it. They all did it the same day.
Immediately.
Yeah, you know? Some of them probably already had it growing in right before the meeting day. It was like, well, I ain't got to shave this off.
Right. And that's what somebody in our comments had actually said, like, with the way that they take these updates so quickly, it shows that these people don't actually like the restrictions that have been put on them if they're able to change so quickly. Because we look at that with our life now, and if somebody were to come in and give us like all these things, it's like we wouldn't change much about our lives because we're actually happy with how we're leading our lives. We're actually happy with ourselves. And in the organization, you simply just don't have that. You want to do all of these things. You're just waiting for permission.
Yeah.
Yeah. Living on the edge. They're living on the edge. And see, I remember when I was in this one congregation, this one sister, she had her own salon, and she goes, I'm going to get as close in the center of Jehovah's organization as I can, because I'm not going to be on the edge, because I'm not going to fall off, you know? And so people, you know, that's why they were following those rules, and they were trying to make sure they didn't fall off the edge, because they didn't want people to be judging them.
Yeah, falling off the edge shouldn't be a concern to you, that much of a witness. You shouldn't want to be near the edge, but it sounds like you fighting against your own nature if you got to do that much to be away from the edge.
Yeah.
Well, so many things that witnesses are instructed to do. And I guess the real problem is that everything that the witnesses are changing now, they were told that somehow these things were a reflection on their love of God, if they did it or not. And then all of a sudden now it has no connection to your love of God anymore. So you mean all those years not wearing a beard had nothing to do with me loving God. And and so now, I mean, it's to be honest with you, man, it's almost insulting. I mean, it is insulting. You'd be a grown man. It's really insulting, you know.
But you know, it's the culture, because the culture teaches people to judge so harshly.
Yeah.
And the last thing that people want to be is on the opposite side of where everybody else is. And the worst thing is to be called an apostate.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of people are so afraid, because it doesn't take a minute for them to label you as an apostate. I mean, you could just do one little thing. You could, when we were leaving, if you said the word internet, you could be labeled apostate. Because when we were leaving, I remember that one brother was like, they talked about the internet so bad that this one brother, we used to go to his house for the book study. And he said, you ain't even supposed to be on the internet. You know, so the internet was demonized. It was demonized. And then now look at what go to JW.org. You know, all of that's out there now. You know, it was a hot mess. You know,
I think that's what people fear the most is though.
Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's what people fear the most is the apostate thing and being labeled, just like you said, because then you know that That is like the number one sin is what they teach. But we talk about it all the time. Like being an apostate from the dictionary definition is literally just leaving a religion, organization, or political party. Like that's what it is.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with a kingdom hall.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with they left Jehovah. And when I was in college, I was preparing one of my portfolios, and I had to go in for my consultation with the professor that weekend. And we had this conversation, just what you said, Lexi. And he was like, no big deal. Apostate just means, he gave me the example of political party. Mm-hmm. He said, you used to be part of this political party, and you're no longer part of that political party. So now you're considered an apostate. And so at that point, I was like, yeah. But the Jehovah's Witnesses have turned the word apostate into a dirty word.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got to scrub yourself down to get that, you know, that stigma. But that word apostate, that's a dirty word there.
Yeah, that's the words.
Yeah, it really is. That is so true. That's a great point. That's an excellent point.
That would make you think you were committing fornication with the word apostate. I mean, a fornicator, it's not considered as bad as an apostate. You know, an apostate,
back.
That's it.
Yeah.
The act of the defiant of questioning what we write in our pamphlets and on our website, that is worse than anything else in the world. That's why with the change they made, you know, with the disfellowship people who you can talk to and so forth, they specifically say, but you can't talk to the apostates though. And it's understandable because anybody who's left the organization, if you talk to them, they're going to present you with information that you can do your own homework on and find out things about the organization. So, I mean, just from a pragmatic standpoint, I can see why they would tell witnesses, don't talk to those guys because, boy, they guys. And we see that with all these channels. And they see it. The organizations see it. I mean, I tell people all the time, we have this discussion a lot. You know, the organization monitors these channels. Whether people realize if you are a content creator, the organization monitors these channels. That's how they find out when you got copyright stuff, because they got somebody watching it. They got somebody watching it. That's what they do. So, yeah. I mean, it's the impact, you know, it's like there are three things that's really impacting the organization now. The government's views around the world are changing. The legal system is impacting them. And persons like ourselves, people are putting out their voice like you guys and others. And what people see, because see, witnesses are scared. And I can understand, we all were. But now you can get all this information in the privacy of your home and nobody will see you. You don't have to go down to the bookstore and buy Ray Francis' book, stand in line, and Sister Davis walking there and he's scared to death. None of that now. None of that. You can get this information in the privacy of your home.
Here's what I think about the governing body. I think that, you know, we talk about critical thinking. If you were at the Kingdom Hall, and let's say you're going out on field service, so there's four people that get in a car group, and those four people could just talk freely. Oh, did you hear Brother so-and-so talk? Oh, did you notice that point that was brought out? Oh, did you see how that didn't make sense, right? So if you were allowed to freely talk in that congregation, in that car group, a lot of people would begin to disband from the religion. And see, so they know that. They know that when they come to these YouTube channels and we're talking and we're speaking, they know we're telling the truth. Because there's brothers. I mean, how do you think JT woke up? How do you think these other brothers woke up in an elders meeting? Circuit overseer just you know, ripping people's heads to shreds. And they're looking at them like, this is not the way Christ would do that. You know, and so you're looking at these brothers that they claim to be from Christ. They claim to be lovers of righteousness.
Yeah.
But yet they're in here treating their brothers like
dirt.
Terrible, right. Yeah. So you're looking at you're hearing them say one thing from the platform. At the same time, you don't see the love. Now, that's how I think I woke up. You know, he was the one that was there that had the
doctrine, more the doctrines. Yeah.
He introduced the doctrines to me, but I always thought that the people were crazy because I thought there was no love. I just thought this ain't right. And see, my mom, you know, she had no filter, you know. And mm-hmm. and so sometimes I may not have no filter. And I remember telling people things. And I'd be like, that ain't right. And they did that. And then people be looking at me like, she ain't spiritual. Something ain't right with her. Yeah. Because they're telling it like it is. And they want to put the lid on what you're trying to say. They ain't trying to hear that.
They don't like really following cultural stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why we tell, you know, the two most important things about you need to know about Jehovah's Witnesses is their teachings and their culture. And when you put the two together, you see it. Many of the teachings have no foundation on the Bible. They're just merely the opinion of some guys who write for the publication. Yeah. That's all just opinion. And we see that because now they're throwing, you know, the wheels are falling off. They're throwing the stuff out on the trash in the backyard. And then we see the culture. And the culture says it is driven by what the Bible says. And then you found, man, the Bible had to do with that. This was just somebody's opinion who's in a very powerful position who literally just made it into a law of God or something from God. And you had to ride with, and if you wanted to ride on that train, you had to ride along with. And people like, I'm not doing it anymore. That's crazy. Yeah. Especially when you consider that's what we tell Bible studies. I mean, you know, we tell Bible studies all the time. Are you willing to question your religion? Every Jehovah's Witness who ever knocked on anybody's door, that was really the bottom line message. Excuse me, man. Are you willing to question what your church teaches? And we would commend people. I remember my mom, when she was studying, she would go back and ask the pastor questions. And then she would come back and tell the lady was studying with her. And the lady was just so proud. You're so brave to go to your pastor and say, show me from the Bible where it says, and you did an elder. Those like that, man, they have you in the back room, boy.
For real, what you read? Who you talking to?
Yeah,
who you talking to? What you read? Yeah, that's right.
That is so true. So, you guys got any challenges to adjusting to the outside world after y'all left this beautiful cult?
I feel like I put the game on pause and went to the hall. And then once I left, I hit play and picked back up because I never got rid of like my old friends and stuff. So it was like back in motion now, like, all right, doing. But yeah, and then like thankfully, like my mom, we got an understanding, me, my sister, and one of my aunt that had been disfellowshipped a lot. We don't talk about religion. Like we got a million other things to discuss and I don't push my thoughts on them and they don't push theirs on me. And we just got a mutual respect. The rest of the family. That's like my aunt stumbled across our YouTube channel. We had like two or three videos up and I already knew what time it was. And that's the aunt. And we had just went down to visit her in Florida like a few weeks before. She's like, why didn't you tell me? And it's like, it just proves like we apostates, the worst of the worst. We hung out a whole day, didn't say nothing about your religion and had a good time. But in our whole conversation was like, I'm like, y'all always tried to make me be who y'all wanted me to be, but never accept me for myself. That's not true and blah, blah, blah. And in a nutshell, that's not true. But since you're not being who I want you to be, I'm not talking to you no more. And then she kept threatening. I'm going to tell dad, my granddad, which is her father. Well, you need to tell dad or I'm going to tell him. And at this point, I'm 30 years old. So and my granddad already knew from my uncle. Me and my uncle had this conversation when I first woke up and I kind of let him know, look, I don't believe in this stuff. And the reason I don't come around as much is because y'all can't respect me enough to stop pushing y'all stuff on me when I don't push it on y'all. So now the rest of the family, they don't talk to me no more. I got a cousin that woke up. She's out in Oregon. So we talk here and there. But like my granddad sent us something in the mail, a return to Jehovah. That thing went in the shredder. Yeah, I went straight to the shredder. Don't send me this stuff. And yeah, so the rest of the family, they cut ties with me, but I still talk to my mom, my aunt, and my sister. Yeah. And it's like, that's what comes with it. I'd rather have my peace of mind and be free than to have to pretend to be something I'm not to be accepted. Because at the end of the day, you live with yourself. You got to look yourself in the mirror. And if you're not being true to you, then you're not gonna have no peace.
Yes.
Yep.
I think the transition coming out was.
I want to just say something. I want to interject real quick. One of the things I want to say is, family is overrated, and I feel like the family members that don't want to talk to me because I'm not a witness, I wouldn't want to be bothered with them even if they weren't. You know.
Yes. Yep.
If they could be that nasty, And they're going to wait for somebody to say, I'm going to give you the green light that you could talk to your family member now. I don't want to talk to you at all if you need permission.
Yeah.
For real.
That's the truth. It's insulting. You know? Just like JT said, it's super insulting. Like, even now that they're allowed to greet people, it's like if somebody would try to say hello to me, I would be like, don't talk to me, because you had to wait for them to say, hey, it's okay to not act like they're completely invisible for you to acknowledge my presence. Like, I don't want to be bothered with you.
No, because you weren't even brave enough to be like, man, forget what they talk about. What's up, cuzzo? What's up, mom? No, you had to let somebody else tell you. And now, like you said, now you want to talk. No, it's nothing to talk about.
There's nothing to talk about.
So what do you do now with the video of the little girl who had to be put out of the house because she's disfellowshipped? What do you do with that video now? Parents looked at the cell phone and they wouldn't even pick the phone up. How's that work? Keep in mind that video was Keep in mind that video was directed by the Holy Spirit of God. You see the person on the phone, don't answer it. 6 months later, God, you can pick the phone up. You can pick the phone.
Right.
Just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Jehovah does not change.
Jehovah doesn't change.
Oh my God.
Sound like he changed in like four quarters. That's a lot of change right there.
Yeah. But the damage has been done. See, people, you know, just because they put the plug on it or they've kind of like put the skin on doesn't mean that other people have not been hurt. Because think about all the people who went to their grave not talking to their family or, you know, not being able to go to the funeral or be at the funeral and being dissed by everybody like you're the plague, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of damage here. There's a lot of damage here.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And on top of it, they try to act like nobody's allowed to have any feelings about it. Like they're, this is just a new, you have to accept it willingly and have like a willing spirit to accept this new light. But that's not fair. It's not fair to people's emotions and all the damage that they've had to face because of their rules that are now no longer a rule. That's not right.
Yeah, that's true. That just reminded me all the time. We would have a family day at my grandparents' house on Monday, but my mom was never allowed to come. But my mom always helped my grandmother during the week and would take them food. So it was just weird. Like my mom can bring them food during the week and take my grandma to doctor's appointments, but she can't come to family day on Monday. But she can cook the food and send it over there. And it got to the point, once I woke up, I'm like, I was never not talking to my mom, even when I got baptized. I'm like, I don't care what y'all talk about. I'm not cutting ties with my mama because y'all see it. So, and now I'm at the point now, I told my mom, like, I'm not being who they want me to be no more to be accepted. I'm not with it no more. So they just not going to have to like it. I came back in town for my 30th birthday last year and my granddad and my uncle just happened to be stopping by because I was in town, and it's a backyard full of people, cousins, friends, all type of people. And my mom is all nervous and stuff. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, I'm 30, I'm in town. And the funniest part, my granddad stayed the whole time. Him and they got on suits. They had just left the convention and they there the whole time. And they're like, is this a birthday party? And my mom was like, well, yeah. And they hung out the whole time. So it was just like, mom, stop worrying about what other people think and just enjoy life. Because this, ever since my grandmother been gone, that taught me, like, she did everything by the books and battled cancer. And that was the results. And that clicked, like, okay, she followed all Jehovah's rules and she had to go out like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, something ain't adding up to me. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's kind of what sparked, you know, my thoughts to me eventually waking up to where I stopped taking that stuff serious.
Wow, that's amazing. That's just absolutely amazing. Not surprising, but amazing. And they never stop and think. You know, that's why we call our channel Critical Thinkers, because your grandfather and your uncle, they should have actually stopped, paused, and took some serious observation of what they would do. But the typical witness has been so conditioned not to think critically that it becomes so difficult. And that's I think this is just me, you know, me and my wife's personal views. That is probably one of the worst things in this organization, is they shut down a person's ability to think critically. Because that's what kept us in. That's what kept us in.
We were so busy following these rules and even though I remember my sister saying she couldn't understand why the kids in school didn't like me. And so when we were comparing notes later in life, she goes, I ate the chocolate cake and I stood for the Pledge of Allegiance. And she said, and I thought you were doing the same thing. And I was like, nobody told me I could do that. But she had all kinds of friends and her life was good. I was like, climbing on the roof. Because I was that little kid that was doing what I was told. Right?
Yeah.
Yep. My sister, she said when she was like 10 years old, she knew she didn't want this religion. And so that's why she did what she did. And so we lived different lives. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. So. Simply amazing. Simply amazing.
Crazy.
Oh man.
So you guys want to talk about your healing journal?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think once we came into this space, we literally just came in to tell our story and see.
We skipped that part.
Yeah, and we just wanted to see if we would help anybody. But then people were like, we want you to talk about this, we want you to talk about that. And we started noticing, like, for us, for our healing journey, we had to take like multiple steps. And that's why we call our channel Awaken Truths, because we didn't just wake up to the organization, but like to a bunch of things and how to kind of like navigate through life and make your life the way that you want to make it. So we came out with a healing journal, and we say that it's good for basically anybody, because
whether you're fresh out or been out for a while, you know, some people, they wake up and they know it's not the truth, but they don't know what to do now with their life. It's just like, I'm just stuck. Or some people are freshly out, or somebody might just be waking up now. So it's really good for any part of it.
Yeah.
Any part of the journey.
Yeah. So we have different chapters in there. It's like kind of like an introspective journal, asking yourself questions. And there's interactive portions at the end of every chapter to like, for you to reflect on your life and your interpersonal relationships with other people. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what it's about.
Yeah, it's pretty much like a self-reflection, because a lot of the times in the organization, it's all about people pleasing. How would the friends feel? How would Jehovah feel? Yeah. And it's never about, how do I feel? What do I want? What do I even like to do?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times the things you like to do, you might not be able to do it because somebody told you you can't do it. So it's like, you might like to sing. You might, it was always certain people at the hall that had voices, Luther Vandross level, and they may have wanted to go to, you know, a bar or something to sing on the weekends, but they can't do it because somebody said that's bad.
Yeah.
So say this person wakes up. What do you like to do? Oh, I love to sing.
Yeah.
Where do you like to sing at? Oh, I like to sing in crowds. Well, do it.
Yeah.
You allowed to. So things, that's some of the things like it'll bring out.
Yeah. It kind of helps you to find yourself again, is what we say. Cause I really think that you lose yourself in this organization because you're constantly being told how to be. So you don't know who you are when you're coming out of it, you know, to an extent. So you have to find that part of you again.
Yeah. I think that's cool. Even like, I don't know if she has a YouTube channel. I don't know if she has TikTok. It was a sister from back home. Her name was Celeste. And she was the super, super witnessy person.
Yeah.
Very by the books. And I remember seeing her on somebody's channel telling her story. And I'm like, that's Celeste from back home. And now she has like green hair and piercings and all of this stuff. And it's like this, but this is what people really want to be.
It's all good.
Yep.
I think part of that is just the journey. And because people have had those restrictions put on them, they come out and that's how they feel. You know, they want to do the things that they didn't. And I think eventually it does balance out, you know, like they balance things out and they realize who they are. But sometimes they might need to go through that moment to reach who, you know, like their best selves.
Right. You just go all the way to the max.
Oh, yeah. Yep. But you know, the cool thing is, I guess at the end of the day, the cool thing is you don't have to feel guilty that you were sinning against God. These are personal choices. These are just your personal choice and taste. And if it don't work out, then it just don't work out for you or whatever. But it has no, and that's why, you know, it's important to understand it has no correlation between your standing before God. And that is the problem with the organization. They took everything we did and they was able to link it to this has a correlation to your relationship with God. And what we now learn after we leave is all this stuff ain't got nothing to do with God. And so what you do over here, yeah, it has nothing to do with God. And that's really the that is the bottom line. We believe so many things will determine whether we lived or died in the eyes of God. And then we find out, not really. We changing the view right now.
That's real. Like, this Bible don't say nothing about no 70 hours in service.
Right.
Put your tie on. You need a tie when you go out. And think about all those years we were on field service wearing tie. We could have walked up a nice little white shirt on that good morning. Because I'm going to check this out. I'll never forget this day out in field service, man. We were out in service, sisters with dresses on, stockings, brothers with suits and ties. And we had to walk past this swimming pool. And those people looked at us like, they got to be crazy. They got to be crazy. 100 degrees out there, man. And I felt that. I'm like, man, we should be able to just take our tie off and, you know, just throw our jacket over. But in some areas, man, they would get on you even if you took your jacket off. I mean, I was forced in a lot of areas. Man, you get the crazy elders, man. You get those crazy elders, man. Because you end up with circuit overseers and elders who end up making their own rules. I mean, most places you can at least wear you know, white shirt and tie, but you get some crazy elders, man, and it's terrible.
We had a mix of elders. We had the serious ones. We had one that was two that was real stern. This dude barely even cracked a smile. He took everything serious.
Yeah.
And then our coordinator, say like it was a congregation gathering on a Sunday, he would cut out to go watch the game. He would bounce. He would leave service early sometimes to watch the game. It would have been times where he would just be driving around in his car, just making sure everything all right. And then he didn't bounce. It was like a mix. Then my granddad, my granddad is funny, but he got his serious moments too. But outside the hall, people didn't know that he was like a goofball. Like he's funny.
He's funny.
Yeah. But yeah, you definitely got a mix. We had one elder. I'm sorry. We had one.
Yeah, people could be favorite, man. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're right. There was one elder, right? He got removed, and the rumor was he was giving his wife all the tea. And she was kind of talking about a lot of stuff that was going on in them meetings, and he got removed, but they kind of swept under the rug. But man, that was probably my favorite elder, because he was a wild dude. He rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but I thought he was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of those. But was that a common thing? Did a lot of elders get in trouble for kind of telling what was going on?
I've never heard of any elder who got in trouble for telling. See, the only reason he got in trouble because he got out. That's what was happening. See, most elders and their wives ain't stupid enough to tell the wrong people and it gets back. But we had somebody in our congregation that was like that. His wife could tell all.
Wait a minute, what's going on with our thing?
Oh, hold on. Hold on.
Is that happening a lot now?
There we go. Can you see us now?
Yeah.
Can you see us now? Okay. Yeah. It depends, but basically, man, you always have elders. Because you hear so much crazy stuff, you end up telling your wife many times. We talked about, we don't go to a lot of, a lot of cases you don't, but you just got to tell somebody. And you hope that you're telling a confidant. The problem is the same elder's wife would get back in the car group. Yeah, I'm going to tell you my husband, he told me.
one sister in our congregation told me, now, the husband had a judicial case. But he didn't tell the sister, his wife, who it was. So she's out in field service. And she's just running her mouth. But she's talking and telling about the case. And the sister, who it was her case, was in the car. But she didn't know that it was her. But she's probably thinking that she knew it was her. But then at that point, we'd be like, why would she be saying it in front of me? So, she thinks she just telling a story, but it is that person.
Right,
and
right.
So I was with Serena, people are talking.
Yeah.
People are moving, people movers, all around different congregations and things like that. And so that happened to that woman. She was furious.
I would be too.
Sitting here telling all the business. They had one. It was one that this gets swept under the rug to this day because the brother got reinstated. Mm-hmm. It was a group of elders that were, it was a big family. So I want to say one was a cousin, the other two were brothers. Mm-hmm. And the one elder, his wife went to the other elder, just like, I caught my husband with a man when I came home and nothing happened. And they swept it under the rug. And as time went on, she kept complaining, like, my husband is going out of town to these parties. And I'm trying to tell y'all what's going on. And they, oh yeah, we'll handle it. So time kept going on. That brother got caught with an undercover cop downtown. And it was all on the news. And that's what it took for him to get disfellowship. And we were telling this story on one of our episodes. And when we go back home to Ohio and we out there with my mom, this man come up and he knew my mom. And he was like, I love y'all podcast. And he was like, somebody had told me, like, you know, that's such and such son. And he was like, on that one episode, you was talking about whoop-de-woo, right? And we busted out laughing. And it was awkward because my mom and sister don't watch our channel and stuff. But he like, yeah, man, I remember back when that happened because they tried to cover that up. But I remember he got caught with that cop, remember? It was funny. But this brother is still around. And that's like a swept under the rug type of thing. It never happened. And I think his wife got like remarried and stuff. But yeah, they just try to pretend this was never a thing. But yeah, you got some stories.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Y'all do. And we have so enjoyed this hour.
Yeah.
Chatting it up this with you guys. And just, you know, we all don't make a difference where we come from. You could be living in Iceland and be in this organization. And we will all have the same type of experiences. It's amazing that religion has, you know, gone all over the world and everybody can get together. And it's like, it's not like we just met, we just live the same experiences.
Live the same experience. And,
it's unique.
Yeah. That's
so we want to thank you guys so much for being on the program. And
absolutely.
Do you guys have any final closing thoughts that you want to make?
We just want to say thank you. Yeah, we want to say thank you so much for having us on. Yeah. We can't wait to reverse the roles.
Yeah, we even joke, like, when we did our first video, like, oh, maybe one day we can talk to JT and Lady C and y'all commenting on this stuff. And we jumping up, they watched our video.
Yeah, man, we have to support each other, man. Yeah, have to support each other.
Yeah.
Well, it's been wonderful, and I'm sure that your life story will lift somebody's spirit and let them know, hey, keep on moving on the move on the move, you know. So
that's what
this has been Lady C.
And this has been JT.
And we'll see you all on the next one. And make sure y'all hit that description for that journal. And we'll see y'all on the next episode.
Take care.
Good job. Bye-bye. All right.
Okay.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.